Today, I'm talking about the principle of diligence. So it is interesting that Al sang the song about David. David is one of my most favorite characters in the Bible, and I think most people would say the same. The stories of his anointing that Al sang about, David and Goliath, the so many events in David's life. But there's another side to David, a sad side, side of failing. And the Bible, what makes the Bible so true is that the Bible tells it all. I'm sure if David had been wanting his life written, he'd said, leave that part out about Bathsheba. Leave that part out about Uriah. Leave that part out about what happened to my family. So since the Bible doesn't leave it out, we can't leave it out. We have to look at the whole picture of David's life. So first, let me define the principle of diligence. I said that because I'm actually going to speak on David, but on not the part that I like, the part I don't like, but it's a part we all need to hear about. The principle of diligence, here's a definition. It says, a steady, earnest, and energetic effort of perseverance at a focused task. The word for diligence could actually be substituted for perseverance, but it's only diligence if it's focused on a noble and worthy task. For instance, if you are being very diligent about storing up money, at the same time, you're being greedy and not compassionate. These are biblical principles I'm talking about. These are not principles. The world has their own definition of what diligent might be, and it probably would fall under the category of ambitious. These principles I'm defining them with a biblical definition. And diligence is only diligence when it's focused toward our God-given goals. Here's a couple of examples. Proverbs 15:9. The Proverbs always help us to focus our life. So Madeline, she's 3 years old. Last Sunday, she's at the house, and she was doing a little show for her grandma, for me, and for her dad. And me and her dad got tickled, and we were laughing, and she looks over at us, and she says, focus. I imagine that's probably what they say to her at daycare. Well, that made it even hard for us to focus. She said to her grandma, I am waiting for the boys to focus. Well, listen to this focus, Proverbs 15:9. The Lord detests the way of the wicked, but he loves those who pursue righteousness. You see, pursue, that's diligence right there. And what are they pursuing? Righteousness. This is a biblical definition of diligence. It is this pursuit of righteousness. Righteousness simply means the right thing. Just doing the right thing, like Micah says, to the three things in Micah 6:8, to act justly means just doing the right thing. That verse, Proverbs 15:9, here it is translated in the Message. It says, a life frittered away disgusts God. He loves those who run straight for the finish line. That's good. A life frittered away disgusts God. He loves those who run straight for the finish line. One more out of Proverbs. Proverbs 15:21. Folly delights a man who lacks judgment, but a man of understanding keeps a straight course. This is diligence. Listen to it in the Message. The empty-headed treat life as a plaything. The perceptive grasp its meaning and make a go of it. I think that helps us to see what I'm talking about when I say diligence. So, those of you who cook, how do you feel when you have bought all the ingredients and you make a cake and you realize that it flops? It's not even worth eating. Disappointed. What's your reaction when you go to an appointment, you've taken off work, and you go to an appointment and they say, we don't have you down, and you realize you got your dates wrong? It's frustrating when you realize you've wasted 2 or 3 hours of your time. And this could happen to us in so many different ways. But you know what's worse than wasting 2 or 3 hours of our time? It's wasting a life. Every time a life is wasted, God is disappointed. That's what those proverbs are saying. When a person fails to pursue their God-given design, the Creator is saddened because he has made a plan for all of our lives, the master architect of purpose. If you ever have the opportunity in San Jose, California, to visit the Winchester Mansion, this is the home that was built by Oliver Winchester, the inventor of the repeating Winchester rifle. It's an interesting place to visit. The lady never stopped building on this place. She was kind of wacko, and it's kind of a nice place to visit. But I only mention Winchester because he died very disappointed. You know why he was disappointed? That his invention was used in ways he never imagined. He never wanted his Winchester to be used to kill other people. It was for law enforcement. It was for hunting. It was for noble purposes. And when it was used in wars, and he had a hard time reconciling himself, and he started giving his money away to try to appease this gnawing sensation that what he had made was misused. The Bible says God has some of that when he looks at the creation and sees how far people go from the purpose. Proverbs 15:3 talks about God's omniscience, his ability of seeing everyone and everything. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good. God doesn't miss a thing. He's omniscient. Difficult for us to understand what omniscient means. In 2 Chronicles 16:9, it says, "For the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him." Ammon, this is the son of David. Let me read to you a paragraph I wrote about these two brothers, Amnon and Absalom. Amnon hated the smell of sheep and the sound of bleeding lambs. Why his brother Absalom had wanted to mess with these stupid animals was beyond comprehension. It had been more than 2 years since Absalom had invited him to one of those sheep-shearing events. As he dismounted his mule by the huge pile of wool, he could see the shearing was well underway. Absalom embraced and kissed his older brother and let him know how delighted he was that all his brothers could come. Servants brought out food and drink. Absalom actually seemed happy, something Amnon wasn't expecting. All the king's sons talked, feasted, and enjoyed the day as the servants shared hundreds of Absalom's sheep. The day swiftly disappeared. No one imagined how the day would end. With no warning, several men surrounded Amnon as he relaxed in the evening air. Then they drew their daggers and plunged them deep into his body. Though his senses had been dulled by wine, he still screamed with pain as his mind raced to put a face on his killer. Then that face suddenly appeared in the form of Absalom, who stared into his dying brother's eyes with a look of satisfaction. "I've waited 2 years, brother, for this moment. Thanks so much for coming. Now the time has come for you to pay for raping my sister. You thought you got away with it, but I have seen to it that you didn't." That's an actual story out of the Bible. I put it into more of a narrative form, but that's exactly what happened. It sounds like some novel, but how is it possible that a rape and a murder could actually happen in David's own family? Here's an answer. It's again Proverbs 12:27. If you haven't figured it out, I love the Proverbs. They are so delightful and so to the point. Listen to this. "The lazy man does not roast his game, but the diligent," there's our word, "the diligent man prizes his possessions." So I would like to say to you, of all of life's possessions, our relationship to the Lord, our relationship to our family, are life's greatest possessions. David, this was his weakest area. Maybe because he was king, maybe because the demands of pressure, maybe because of his personality. All those things were true about David. The song that Al was singing, he had such a relationship with the Lord. Even the Bible talks about he was such a man after God's own heart. And we have the Psalms as a testament to his beautiful, unrelenting relationship with God, despite all of his failures. You don't find any of it in his family. You know, you can't find one of his kids. So there is a total disconnect between the man of character who indeed followed God's own heart, but unfortunately wasn't able to teach it to his sons. The passing of this wonderful possession, the possession of who God is and what he's done for you, passing it on to the next generation, is the greatest work of diligence that there is on the face of the earth. When it comes to Absalom, who we're principally studying here this morning, you could say the original plan by the original architect of God, when that little child was born and he was a beautiful baby, the Bible describes him, and he grew up to be a beautiful child, a handsome man that is, the Bible, when the Bible says you're handsome, and when it says you're beautiful, and it describes the word handsome from Absalom, from the top of his head to the sole of his feet. But God's original plan for that life was never opened, never studied, never fulfilled. It is a study of regret, because Absalom is an unfinished life. The epithet could have read, "What a shame to see the plans of the original architect ignored as he built his life according to his own plans." It's amazing that David could slay the giants, that nobody else in the entire army could, but he couldn't slay the giants that attacked his family. And that's where they are most needed. David, I think, in certain ways followed fool's gold. For a couple years we lived in Northern California. As some of you know, we're going to California, Marilyn and I, for just a few weeks of vacation, a couple weeks. We're from the middle of California, right in the middle of the state. But for a couple years we lived in the mountains above Sacramento. That's considered Northern California. And on the drive from Sacramento, the biggest city up there, we would drive up to where we were living in a city called Pine Grove, about 60 miles, and it would be climbing up to about almost 5,000-6,000 feet elevation. The landscape starts to change from oaks to pines, and you're going up into the Sierras. And you pass through a lot of little quaint towns. Well, one of the little towns you pass through on your way up there is called Sutter's Creek. It's still very quaint, has little shops, but there's a true story about this town. So back in the Gold Rush days, the 1800, a man named Sutter, and there's a creek there called Sutter's Creek that just flow, you know, as a natural flow, and he had a mill where he milled, like a lot of the older mills here in Missouri, and people would bring their grain, and he would mill it for them, turn it into flour. And then he had a store where he'd sell them. Most of these people were buying and heading up into the mountains to get rich. Well, at least that's what it looked like anyway. And they were all, and so day after day, Sutter is selling them picks, shovels, pans, you know, to pan for gold and their food. And there they go, somebody else getting rich, somebody else getting rich. And Sutter, who actually made a very successful living, it got to him. And he said, "You know what? I am sick and tired of all these people going and getting rich, and I'm just staying down here selling all these goods." He sold his property, and he headed up into the mountains to get rich. And he'd been up there a year or two working away, not finding anything except little bitty. And there was a huge mother lode discovered. Where do you think? At Sutter's Creek, on the property he had sold, on his own property. The mine is still there. And the people who bought that became extremely wealthy. So here is the man who had gold right underneath him, and he went off in search of fool's gold and lost. That's kind of like David. The real gold was not out there becoming a greater, greater king. The real gold was his family, right? And it is for all of us. A few observations about David's life and his interaction with his family. There's not a lot here, and that's part of the problem. It takes interaction. But sin in the life of any person crushes your effectiveness to live the Christian life, especially in the life of a parent. It crushes your effectiveness. And David had sin. Sin that he hid. And only in God's mercy did the sin ever come to light. Here's David's own words in Psalm 32. "When I kept silent..." Silent about what? Silent about his sin. "When I kept silent, my bones wasted away. though my groaning all day long, through my groaning all day long, for day and night your hand was heavy upon me, my strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. What happened in that year and a half that David was silent and in other parts of his life is that neglect. When a person is living under guilt, when a parent's living under guilt, you're not a capable parent. You aren't able to do the job. That's why John says, if you sin, just confess your sin right there. And we have an advocate, Jesus. You don't have to rush to the church. You don't have to fill out an application. You don't have to make an appointment. You just take care of it. That's how you stay strong. When you hide it, when you make excuses for it, when you wait, when you neglect, the enemy gets a foothold in your life. That happened in David's life. And during that time, there were terrible things happening to his family. One of the events that happened in David's family, one of his sons, Amnon, actually tricked his sister Tamar into coming and baking for him, and then he raped her, and then after he raped her, he put her out. This happened to be Absalom's full sister. He took her into his home, but resentment and hurt built up in his heart. He waited for his father to do something, but not even a word of reprimand or no consequences, no punishment, nothing. This neglect to exercise parental authority caused Absalom to seek revenge. He waited. In fact, 2 Samuel 13:22 says, Absalom never said a word to Amnon, either good or bad. He hated Amnon. This is his brother. Because he had disgraced his sister Tamar. There were things under the surface, and you can trace the dysfunction of David not dealing with his family here to his own sin and his incompetence. This is what makes us ineffective. But there's always personal responsibility. How much responsibility belongs to David for the actions of Absalom and Amnon? Probably a lot. But ultimately, God holds Amnon responsible for his action. God holds Amnon responsible for his own action. He holds each of us responsible for our own sin. One of the things that I like to say, which I really see so true in Scripture, is that it's never too late to do the right thing in life. Those verses out of Proverbs, it's about doing the right thing. And a person says, well, what if I haven't done the right thing? There are things in my life that bring me a lot of regret. Today can be the first day of the rest of your life. It's never too late to do the right thing. Absalom, after he murdered his brother, he left. He went away to where his father-in-law lived, and actually in a different country, and he stayed there for 2 years. And then there's a whole story of getting him to come back. And so some people are involved. They want Absalom and David to be reunited, and they get Joab to come back. But he comes back, and he's already back 3 years, and David doesn't talk. He's down there for three. He's back for two, 5 years altogether. And David hasn't called for him. There's no contact whatsoever. And Absalom, he burns down General Joab's barley fields, a way to get somebody's attention. And Absalom says in chapter 14, verse 32, Absalom said to Joab, look, I sent word to you and said, come here, so I can send you to the king to ask, why have you come from Geshur? It would be better for me if I were still there. Now then, I want to see the king's face, and if I am guilty of anything, let him put me to death. It just breaks your heart to see this Absalom yearning for this contact with his father. And Absalom's life is on a track toward disaster. He's already. And David is missing the opportunity to reach out to this son who is wanting this connection so very much with his father. Let me tell you, when you talk with your family and you talk out problems, you're never wasting time. No matter how difficult it is, no matter how much time it seems like you're losing or wasting, believe me, you're not wasting time. Do you know where a daughter's self-confidence and worth comes from? Primarily from the link with her father. And a boy's sense of manhood is related to his father. Absalom was a boy that was left unchecked. All of David's kids were left unchecked, and they were on a reckless path. Here's an example in 2 Samuel 15. In the course of time, Absalom provided himself with a chariot and horses with 50 men to run ahead. That's kind of equal to a limo with an escort. Absalom had the resources. I mean, he's the son's king. He could do about whatever he wanted. The credit card was available. There's no limit to spending. And he is, as a sense of entitlement, he found it very easy to take advantage of each other. Nobody's interfering. No one's guiding him. David had this incredible relationship with God, but where is it with Absalom? This young man who has so many advantages, so much potential. Where's all the stuff that David knows about humility? David, his Psalms are full of humility. It's full of perseverance. It's full of all the principles. But where is it when it comes to passing this on to Absalom? It's not there. David's life inspired so many, but not Absalom. Why is that? Because when your children are small, you have to have this X-ray vision, and God gives you this X-ray vision into your children's lives, and you watch them, and you see a toxic weed come up, you pull it out. I have this little clip that I played at the family seminar. It's a VeggieTale clip. It's real intellectual. In the VeggieTale clip, it has the guy has these three little pirates, and they're being awarded this award for being heroes. And he's telling them all the stuff they've done, and they're like looking at each other. Is he talking about us? We didn't do anything. Actually, when God does anything in our lives, we're like the three little pirates. It's never because of who we are. It's never because of our intelligence. Never because we're smarter. It's only because we allow God to work in us. And I have found this to be totally true. Here, David is capable of allowing God to work in him, in his life, in certain areas. And then when it comes to his family, that's totally blocked off. I have actually known people like this in the ministry. And do you know why I think that is? I think the family is the hardest challenge of all. Much harder than preaching to 5,000 people or 10,000 people. These are the people who know you the best, who can actually say, "Dad, I don't believe that." Who can protest, who can throw it back in your face. Absalom is left completely unchecked. Unlimited resources. He has smarts. He has this attractive personality. He's handsome. And now he's left completely unchecked. Look what it says. Absalom behaved in this way toward all the Israelites who came to the king asking for justice. And so he stole the hearts of men toward Israel. You know, there's a civil war that actually happens between Absalom, because Absalom actually leads a mutiny against his king. And before the civil war will be over, this on one side, it's Absalom. On the other side, it's David. And David has to flee for his life. And there'll be 20,000 men die. But that civil war didn't start just like that. It was a long time in the making. Here, Absalom was turning the hearts of the people. David was aware of this. He saw what was happening. He was sticking his head in the sand and thinking, I can't be that bad. Yeah, it can. I don't think David ever imagined there would be a civil war and that his son would lead an army against him. But that was being naive. That was being foolish. Where was the diligent pursuit that David could do when facing Goliath or facing an enemy or his pursuit of God, his pursuit of his family? He wasn't diligent. That's why I respect the Bible so much, because it doesn't paint all these glorious guys with just take out all the stuff. If there's something about you that's not so beautiful, the Bible will put it in there. That's what makes the Bible so authentic and so believable. Absalom like every child longed for the approval of his father, the acceptance of his parents, every child does. And do you know who knew all about that? David wrote the most beautiful psalm. I think the most beautiful psalm in the Psalter is Psalm 139. And many people will agree with me. Psalm 139 is one of the most incredible psalms ever written. The words that come in the psalm were inspired by the Holy Spirit. And David is writing about who we are, our significance in life, that it comes from the Creator. Listen to these words from David's pen. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. Do you think if David had taught that to Absalom, it would have had an impact on his life? You better believe it would have. That's the part that Absalom needed to turn his life around. So when we have a little child, all of us are amazed at little babies, and you see them, even a little child, you know, you're just so amazed. But we should actually be, we should constantly be saying, Lord, what's the plan for this child? What's my role in the plan for this child? The enemy is after all of our family, and I believe the enemy was after Absalom like no one could imagine. I think the temptations that were coming to him, I mean, he had extra temptation because he had so many advantages in life, and the temptations that were coming, the enemy was pursuing him like a ravenous wolf. A question to always ask when we are leading a family, when we're living the Christian life, not just the family, the people who know us in our community, the people who know us on the job, the people who know us in the church, is to ask ourselves, how much will my sin cost those around me? Maybe we'll remember sometime back, the Vice President Pence, his wife, she was giving a speech, and she said that her husband had a rule, and he'd had it for several years, and that is that he didn't meet with women alone, and he didn't have dinner with women alone. And the media got a hold of this. There was like 15 articles written over the next 2 weeks condemning him for being misogynist or prejudiced toward women. That was, how could you in our society? One guy actually wrote an article published in the Washington Post that actually said that Vice President Pence should be sued for doing something illegal and announcing that he wouldn't meet with women privately because that's so bigoted and prejudiced. Can you believe our society? Well, the rule that Pence actually adopted is the Billy Graham rule. Billy Graham's the one that came up with it, and it helped him all the way through the 50s, the 60s, 70s, and 80s to be pure and faithful to his family. But that shows you the world we live in today, that their idea of fidelity, their idea of what is right and what is wrong is completely contrary to what the Bible teaches us. Totally. So we should be conscious of how much my sin will cost me. There's no consciousness of how much your sin will cost. The world doesn't even believe in sin. It's just mistakes. And you need a publicist to just help you fix the mistake and go on. David's sin cost his family a lot. During Absalom's lifetime, and this is a really sad commentary on the life of Absalom, it says in 2 Samuel 18, during his lifetime, Absalom had taken a pillar and erected it in the king's valley as a monument to himself, for he thought, I have no son to carry on the memory of my name. He named the pillar after himself and is called Absalom's monument to this day. It was really strange because Absalom had three sons, and they were alive. But he erects a monument to himself because this will be the only monument. My kids are not going to be any monument to me. It sounds like the legacy David was leaving to Absalom, Absalom was leaving to his own kids. And listen to this commentary. So there was a civil war that broke out, and that whole several chapters narrates the civil war between Absalom's army. Some of David's advisors defected over to Absalom. And God in his mercy only spares David, and as I said, it came at a cost of 20,000. So after the battle is over, Absalom is caught. He has this huge head of hair, kind of like mine here. There's this huge head of hair, and he's riding on a mule, and he gets caught in an oak tree. And Joab, the army had been given specific orders not to kill Absalom, but Joab is so fed up with this spoiled brat kid that he disobeys the king, and he kills him. And he just comes back and gives the word to the king that Joab died in the battle. And here is David's response. The king was shaken. He went up to the room over the gateway and wept. As he went, he said, "Oh, my son Absalom, oh, my son Absalom, if only I had died instead of you, oh, my son Absalom." See, what you see what's in there is guilt. See, it's just a guilt-ridden expression, a terrible, terrible guilt. I wish I had been the one dying, Absalom, and not you. But it's more of a missed life. Absalom's life is a picture of a missed life, and David's example to him is, you see, it's God that gives significance to us in life. That's why in the Proverbs and in the Psalms, it constantly says that life must begin with the fear of the Lord. What does that mean? That's expounding our significance. That's where our purpose comes from. If we don't get that right, you can't be diligent, because you will never be able to pursue what you're supposed to pursue, which is God and God's righteousness, God's cause. Introducing our children to God at the earliest age is our greatest responsibility on this earth. And if we didn't do our children, let's do our grandchildren or great-grandchildren or nieces or nephews. Absalom frustrated God's purposes by rejecting God's way. I want to address parents this morning, just all of us, who sometimes are more concerned about the popularity of your son or your daughter than the relationship with Christ. Parents have been willing to pay any cost to see your kids dressed in the latest fashions, but spiritually dressed in rags. Many parents would never think of their child missing a prom or sports event while allowing their child to miss church or miss an opportunity to draw close to God. Proverbs describes parents who see their child following hard after the world and turning away from Christ like this. 14:12. There's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. This is someone who is, I think this is right, and you drive 100 miles, you say, you know what, I'm on the wrong road. Who hasn't done that? But when it comes to life, you want to get it right. Later, parents, when your child has a drug addiction or STD or wants nothing to do with you or God or the church, you don't know who to blame. Your willingness to ignore the warning signs and allow unresolved issues will contribute to the coldness of soul. The most important issue that we will ever deal with in our life is the condition of our child's temperature, spiritual temperature, and their connection with us. That's more important than your house. That's more important than your retirement. That's more important than your health. That's the most important thing. It's called family. Proverbs 19:16 says, "He who obeys instructions guards his life, but he who is contemptuous of his ways will die." That's Absalom, but it's also David. Proverbs 1:22. Proverbs chapter 1 has a special memory for me, because when I was about 23, I was what they called in that time, I was the leader for young people for about 30 churches, and there was a rally once a month, and it was pretty well attended, you know, over 500, and so I would line up a speaker every time. So this one month, this is the day of the rally, I get a call from the speaker saying that he can't come, he's sick. So I made a few calls, nobody could do it, so I spoke, and I had a couple hours to prepare for that event, and I was only 23, very nervous. This is all young people, several hundred of them, probably well over 500. And I chose to speak on Proverbs 1:22. Proverbs 1 is the voice of regret and wisdom, the whole chapter. And the chapter is I've been talking to you this whole time. I've been trying to get you to listen, but you wouldn't listen to me. Now you are old. Now you're sick. Now you're poor. Now you've lost everything. What am I supposed to do? I spent all these years listening to you, saying, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. There's nothing I can do for you. Well, I was preparing that message, and I thought, either this message, they're going to hang me and kick me out, because all the messages were like, pump up all these kids and tell them how wonderful they were. And here I had this message, and I was trying to prepare it, and I thought, that doesn't sound like a message, you know, it's going to inspire kids, and I would try something else. Anyway, I did it. And I felt the anointing that night in such a powerful, powerful way. And I saw kids' faces hearing this message that night. It was scary, because it should be. Their whole life's in front of them. Life is too precious to allow kids to just dilly-dally. You can ask kids, what are you going to do after you get out of high school? I don't know. Years pass by just like that. You see in the news, this guy suing his parents because they're making him get out of his house. He's 30 years old. And the judge decided in their favor, so he's having to leave. He's 30 years old. He lost his lawsuit. He said, I just wanted 6 months more. He's really got his life in pursuit, man. He's got his goals there. This is it. This is really where the rubber meets the road. One of the ways you can get here is by prioritizing everything. You'll come up with one thing if you prioritize. The number one thing in your life is my relationship to God. Number two is my relationship to my children. Number three, their relationship to God. Everything else comes in after that. David didn't do that. As much as I love David, he didn't do that. Solomon, the one bright light in David's life, toward the end, David said, you know what, I messed up with all these. I'm going to start working on this little kid that's just come along. He started turning around his last child, kind of like Jacob turning around after messing up with so many. Solomon had his own mess ups, but he came back to God and he gave us the Proverbs. These words are actually from Solomon. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your paths straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. What wise advice. I think it came from David. Through his youngest son. Never too late. Never too late to turn it around. And here's the verse I started with, Proverbs 12:27. The lazy man does not roast his game, but the diligent man prizes his possessions. What's the greatest possession we have? It's our family. That's it. It's worth more than everything else. Let us prize it and be diligent about it.